Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 404, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. I'm joined today by Paul Nelson from SWFLEmits.com, or better known as Managed IT Services is the name of his company in Southwest Florida, the sunny state. How you doing, Paul?
Great, Jeff. It's nice to finally be on.
Well, I'm glad you contacted me and you decided to, come on the show and share kind of what you're doing in your business. And it sounds like you got some new things coming up. But let's start off by first, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got started in computer repair?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, just kind of the usual my whole life, you're always told by family, well, that's something you should really do, as a career. I never quite followed it specifically as a career choice. I kind of went the academic route. I studied business at University of Florida down here and just kind of shot through the academic world and ended up working in the food and restaurant business for a while. But the whole time, during that time, I had just kept up with tech as a hobby. People probably wouldn't have pegged me as a tech person, but, unbeknownst to them, I kind of was packet sniffing back in 2006 in college, just kind of playing around with stuff. I was just always intrigued about computers and the industry and always just kind of hungry for knowledge. And it's nice when you can, something like that is a passion. It's basically what you would choose to study when you don't have to. No one's telling you to study for this stuff, but still you pick something out and learn it because you're intrigued and you want to know how it works.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Those are all good points. Definitely one of the things that in this business, if you're doing something you love to do, it doesn't make it as hard to learn it. But if you're doing something that you don't like to do, well, you got to kind of force yourself to, whether it's going to school, trade school or whatever, you got to force yourself to learn the knowledge and be able to do that stuff.
Yep. And it's a lot of times I know from the outside eye or the uninterested, persona, they'll look at a lifestyle like mine and they'll say, man, don't you ever get bored or fed up? You work full time business IT company, you're doing, residential and stuff on the side and favors for friends. And then when you have spare time, you're studying and learning things as a pet project. And it's like, it doesn't really get boring or uninterested to me.
A lot of people, they will say if they work in IT for their day job, a lot of times they'll say when they come home, the last thing they want to do is touch a computer at all. To a lot of people, what they do for their living and that they don't want to deal with it after hours, that's the way most people look at things.
But when you have I can see that.
But when you have a passion for something, that makes it just – that much more exciting.
One time recently where I had that exact thought was when I had some issues with my own personal home ISP account, and I just could not get up the spirit to call a certain ISP, as CC will say, and just did not want to call them, even if it was going to help my personal finances and my bill to call and get charges taken off. I'm just like, man, I talk to these people all day for the day job, for my clients, but I just do not want to call them personally. Thankfully now we've hired a new tech and that's pretty much the bulk of what I have him do. So I have him do all the Comcast calls or the ISP calls.
Okay. Well, that's cool. So what is it what is it you do in your business, or did you get started in, I know you said you were working with a couple other people in your business and
sure.
Basically tell us how you got started.
Yeah. Give you the whole overview. Basically, my boss is the CCNA and the MCSE. He's the genius networking tech and guru. He's been in the industry his whole life. He did not go the academic route. He I think he got his both of those CCNA and MCSE, I think probably before he was a legal adult. And he went straight into the industry, signed on with a local company who at the time was a repair kiosk in the mall, actually. And he took that company all the way out of that little booth in the mall, all the way to the full brick and mortar corner store doing business support and still, you know, doing the residential, and basically developed the whole managed services wing of that company. Got them into the managed services side of things, saw that trend in the industry developing, realized that's where things were headed, and he's the one who actually even developed the professional services agreement for that company, and he worked for them for 7 years until he felt that it was not advantageous for him anymore, we can just say. And he split off and created his own company, and he happened to you know, be a friend of mine and a colleague of mine at the time. And, you know, I got the opportunity to kind of go out with him and see what he does, you know, and get a good orientation. And that was in the beginning of the year. And since then, things have just taken off astronomically. Thankfully, we both fit together like two sides of the puzzle. And basically, each of our strong points and weak points are the reciprocative opposites in each other. So things that he's not good at, like administrative stuff and emails and all that kind of stuff, social media, I pick up that stuff. And, you know, so we just really fit well together and work together. So we've been in business just approaching a year now, and we've, you know, came from – he had 7 years of industry contacts and people in the industry. So we've came from, you know, a few clients and no projects to probably somewhere close to around 100 end users and, you know, 15 to 20, you know, small to medium businesses on professional services agreements. And we don't do any residential at this current company. So it's all business support with a managed service focus. However, you know, we do take on project work. There's a lot of the bigger MSP companies here in Southwest Florida that they will not even entertain a project bid, even if there's $8,000 profit attached to it, if, you know, a business is not 100% certain that they will enter into an agreement, you know, after project completion.
Okay, gotcha. So now when we're talking about managed services, a lot of people look at managed services a little bit differently. So when you talk about managed services for your company, what types of things do you provide?
Okay. Yeah, we enter into what's called a professional services agreement. It's a binding contract between us and the business that states not only the financial rates for services, we do a 3-month PSA, but we manage pretty much the full spectrum of everything of the company's IT operations. I'm just pulling up our professional services agreement here. We manage, I'm going to go right to our scope of services. Network management and support, a lot of documentation, strategic information technology planning, workstation management, you know, help desk, the usual help desk stuff, project management, you know, we will help them with, you know, new projects and additions to the network. You know, we'll have to build that back into the contract, and it's usually billed separately from, you know, the normal project cost. Comes with, you know, we provide the antivirus as well as the on-site backup, off-site backup, hosted exchange if they'd like to go that route, cloud storage, you know, so it kind of depends on each company. We have some companies, you know, we support businesses, you know, completely across the different industry spectrums. You know, we have architects, a lot of hotels and resorts, you know, some construction companies, even furniture stores, accountants, you know, the whole gamut.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, it sounds like you cover a lot of the regular things that are covered, basically managing from, you know, from top to bottom, whatever that particular company needs. And obviously, I mean, it's probably the same in every company, that not every business is going to take every one of those features. It's probably a mix and match. Yep. A little bit of whatever they need. Mm-hmm. At the time.
And it's interesting because as you go on, you know, through the onboarding process, and as you get to know a new client, you can look back across the client base and you can see, interesting enough, that there's some clients will basically, usually every client will, I would say, you know, strongly always take advantage of like 30% of what's available in the scope of services. They'll use the rest, you know, up to about 80%. They'll use that, you know, when it comes up. And then there's usually like a good 20% of the scope of services that usually they'll never demand, you know, use of. Some people just don't have a need for cloud backup or never pursue it, never ask for it, even if it's offered in the contract and it's available there for them to take advantage of. You know, it's funny because there's, depending on the industry and the client, usually they'll pick a good 20 to 30% of the scope of services and they'll just focus heavily on receiving, you know, those services and kind of, you know, not explore the others.
And I mean, obviously you guys are doing probably what everybody else is doing. You're explaining to them the benefits of the services that you're offering. Like, let's say, let's take cloud backup for instance. You know, cloud backup, in my opinion, in today's day and age is very important, I would think, for most industries, no matter who you are, just because the way I've always looked at cloud backup is it's my second line of defense. My first line of defense is always my local backup. My second line of defense is that cloud backup, just because in case of a catastrophic whatever, I need that information that I can get to somewhere. But as far as, you know, if I just have a hard drive die or something like that, and I need to get information back quickly, I'm going to much rather have a local backup, for that type of thing. So now what do you guys use for your cloud backup and stuff like that?
Currently, it depends on the situation. The bulk of what we've explored so far is a product from Barracuda. It's called Copy. We, you know, tend to deploy and use Barracuda equipment as much as possible. It can be a little pricey for the smaller side businesses, but they have all-star Platinum award-winning technical support. I don't think I've ever waited more than 5 minutes to speak to a Barracuda. I've had them on the phone with me for 4 hours, phone calls, you know, trying to figure out, you know, some things. And so really it's Barracuda Copy at the current time. We've been approached and spoken with GFI about their managed cloud backup, but haven't explored it fully. We've been taken out to a couple luncheons from some other cloud backup companies. I just find that the market and the current aggression in the marketing from the cloud backup vendors is quite heavy. You know, there's a lot of them. It's a hot topic right now, and it seems like everybody's like trying to get a piece of the pie. So, Barracuda Copy is free. It's free for anybody who wants to sign up with 15 gigs of storage free, and you can kind of refer people and get extra 5 gigs up to 25 gigs for free if you refer a couple people.
Okay, now what I had thought of when you said Barracuda, I would always thought about hardware backup, but that's
the same company.
Okay, so they do the local hardware type backup, and they also do the cloud backup.
We use Acronis to make images, like for a local, you can consider that an offsite backup by bringing it here to our server, but it just for cloud stuff, Barracuda Copy, it's just a client, you know, okay, similar to like LiveDrive or something like that. Anything that you put in a designated folder will get, you know, pushed to the cloud to Barracuda servers. And then any computer or machine or even your phone, if you download the app, anywhere that you log into using that account's credentials, it'll maintain a perfect sync of that folder on any machine that you install the client on.
Okay, that's good. And you said that's free?
Mm-hmm.
And they give you 15 gigs, huh?
15 gigs free, no stipulations attached, and you can refer people for a 5 gig bonus up to 25 gigs cap. When I first heard that, I thought I was going to have like 100 gig, you know, cloud box, and I quickly found out it was 25 gig cap.
Okay, gotcha. So now, for your local backups, you're using Acronis, you said?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you like that?
Acronis as well. Actually, I just had an incident this week of the good old crypto locker, where residential retail valuation companies, of course, his wife, the receptionist, you know, called us out and had and these are people that actually, interestingly enough, had just about 3 months ago decided that they no longer wanted to do a managed service contract. They didn't feel that, you know, paying a monthly amount, you know, they were doing the cost benefit and going back over the year, each year, how much they spent on IT, been exploring the yearly cost of a maintenance contract with us and had decided that, you know, they don't think that was for them. They would call us. We're their people. If they had a problem, they'll call us. And this same company, I'm currently here looking at my desk looking at the new professional services agreement that was signed last week after CryptoLocker. But yeah, Acronis Easy, I was able to restore an Acronis archive, pull their access database. It was maybe 3 days or so behind.
Okay.
From current operations. So if it wasn't for Acronis, I would venture to say that they would have had quite some loss in records and time inputting all that.
Now, your Acronis now, do you set that up where it automatically creates that image on a regular basis?
Theirs was, thankfully, it was set, you know, with its own dedicated, I don't know if it was a partition, it was a network drive to where it was doing incremental backups. So, thankfully, in that situation, it was. Currently, it's different depending on the client and the type of networks. We have some networks that are, you know, are as big as, you know, 7 servers and 50 workstations, and you got to kind of tailor the backup solutions to each client individually based on what kind of data they're using, what kind of size are we talking about, and backup. Some of these Acronis archives can get up, you know, close. I think I've done 300 to 400 gig Acronis images, and that's usually where I have to come by and drop off an external hard drive and start the data transfer and kind of come back the next day or the morning to bring that offsite.
Got you. So when you say offsite, you actually, do you manually bring that offsite? Or
I will manually pick it up with an external hard drive and bring it back to store on our server here at the office, just, you know, because I don't think TeamViewer is going to transfer the 500 gigs in any timely fashion.
No, probably not. So now, was this drive, the computer that got hit with CryptoWall, was this drive actually attached at the time?
The drive, like for me to collect backups, theirs actually, since they were not, they had recently ended their contract with us, I did not set up Acronis on there to where I was like going there regularly to like physically collect things. I actually, it was set up by another tech of ours who has since left our company and seemingly left the industry, but thankfully he set up the incremental backups right. It was basically, I think it was going to a NAS on their network. She got hit on her workstation in the front office workstation. She did have quite an abundance of MAP network drives, and I think if you're experienced with MAP network drives, a lot of times if you reboot the computer, it'll try to initialize that mapped connection before the network card initializes a lot of times. So a lot of times it'll show red X's. And from my research on CryptoWall, that it can spread to the server throughout the network through MAP network drives if the credentials are saved and are currently available. So thankfully for them, it had only went to one directory on their server share drive, which happened to be where the access database was. And the Acronis backups were going to a NAS, which was separated, so it wasn't affected.
So the NAS was not mapped.
I guess not. Okay. If it was not. You know, the connection wasn't established at that time, so it couldn't have spread. I don't know why she had, like, I would say 8 or 9 map network drives to different locations on their server, and oddly enough, there was only that one because their QuickBooks was on there. Several things were on there, which I could have all pulled any of that stuff from the Acronis image. You know, thankfully that was actually one of my first times actually dealing with it. On a needed basis to where this was a kind of a real life emergency situation where this data needed to be restored. It wasn't like an experimental test run, like let's play with Acronis. It was, we really need to get this database. And it worked. It worked like a charm. I'd say I was able to recover the database in about 5 minutes. And it's one of those times that we face in the computer world, like I'm sure you've seen in residential calls where, you know, you go to a call and somehow it's something, you know, that's creating a lot of havoc. You know, let's say like a rootkit where, you know, explore.exe is taking up, you know, 900 KB of 900,000 kilobytes of memory, and you find a rootkit, you know, you run TDSS, which never finds anything anymore, but, you know, and then in 5 minutes, basically, you resolve the issue, and you're just kind of sitting there like, man, how am I going to stretch this out? So that's what it was like. I had basically pulled their data, something that I told them it could take quite some time and, you know, no guarantees based on if, you know, if we had to deal with the encryption, the file encryption. And, you know, I was like, man, should I tell them I got it this quick? Yeah.
Right, right. Well, you know, whenever I'm removing a virus myself, I will definitely, I probably go a little overboard on making sure that everything mm-hmm. is completely clean, because
of course
the last thing I want is a customer to come back and go, it's still infected, you know?
All right. Yeah. So, I know that you're a big advocate of no virus removals without cleanups, and I agree with that. You know, I would never kind of go to someone's and remove a rootkit and just think I found the problem 5 minutes and turn it over. Of course, I would do my due diligence afterwards. But sometimes you know, it really turns out that way. That basically the whole issue that they're experiencing, you know, no matter how drastic it looked and the results and symptoms it produced, that, you know, it can be resolved sometimes quite quickly. But of course, you want to go through and, you know, a lot of times I'll sit down with them to identify any programs. A lot of times you'll see you sit down with these people. You know, if you're going through with business environment, you have to be kind of careful where you go through and do cleanups. Residential stuff, a lot of times you know what they're going to be using, what they're not. You know, you see, you know, 15 different HP utilities. You can probably be safe in removing a good bulk of that. But a lot of times, you know, it's better to use caution and just kind of wait until you're there in their presence and you sit down, you go over, you know, the CCleaner uninstall list or the, you know, add remove programs, and you say, do you use this? You know, 95% of the time, whatever you were going to uninstall that you waited, you would have been safe to uninstall. But every now and then I've definitely uninstalled some programs that in my opinion seemed erroneous or, you know, probably got in there, you know, through malicious, you know, routes. And then once delivering the computer back, they were like, well, where is this program? And I'm like, you actually use that? Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. I think sometimes in a business environment, you definitely have to do that. A lot of times I won't, like with HP tools and stuff like that on an HP computer or even from the printer, I just turn it off to where it doesn't start up. I actually leave those programs on the system because they usually came installed that way. And as long as they're not starting up and in hogging resources, I usually don't have a problem with them. But, you know, when it comes to toolbars, even a Yahoo toolbar, which people may or may not use, I still uninstall it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I do. And then, you know, I'll always, you know, usually leave, like, you know, if it's someone that's not a contract customer, we'll still leave them on the GFI for like a week or so. And if it's something crucial or it really bothers them, you know, they'll call. But it's definitely a situation that, you know, that is tailored to every use case. You know, and coming from, you know, management side and having done recruiting and some training and, you know, hiring of staff and interns here, it's definitely a vast disconnect between the residential route of dealing with issues and the commercial route. You know, one of the big hurdles that we face with hiring people that, you know, that their experience comes from the residential side is teaching them how to apply that skill set and use the things and the knowledge that they do in the appropriate manner when dealing in the commercial world. Like, say, for instance, I've, you know, in a test question or so that I've given these interns, you know, say, you know, Mary, you know, at workstation 10, you know, can't access the internet, you know, like, tell me your troubleshooting steps. And, you know, there's quite a few people that would say, you know, I would reboot the modem. And I'm like, you know, what about the other 30 people, you know, that are currently working on the network that still have internet? You know? So right. There's that. Usually residential, something's broke, they bring it to you. You have unlimited free reign, full access to do whatever you want on that computer until the issue's resolved and it's returned. You know, it's not like that in the business world. A lot of times there'll be one end user that has, you know, has an issue in an active ongoing network environment, you know, that you kind of have to be able to troubleshoot, you know, and resolve that issue, you know, while, you know, being careful enough to not, you know, interrupt the other people on the network. Some of the businesses that we contract are 7 days a week, you know, pretty much 24/7, like, you know, like these hotels and restaurants and resort inns and stuff, they're not closed ever, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, one of the things I used to scoff at is I would always hear, especially people that are working in businesses, and mine is mostly residential right now, but, you know, they would talk about things like the N2K file, you know, mm-hmm. which basically is, you know, when you're typing in an email address, it pops up, and so that you can go down a list of email addresses and populate the email address much mm-hmm. easier.
Autocomplete, yeah.
And, you know, I kind of scoffed at it until I redid my computer about a month ago, And one of the things I forgot to pull was the N2K file. And because of that, I use Outlook all the time. And I found it very, very frustrating because I send emails out on a daily basis doing this show and the other shows that I do, doing stuff for work, you know, and all this stuff. And I'm like going, and I basically am having to re-input the information again. And it is a pain.
It's very, very similar to, you know, the stored Wi-Fi credentials where somebody, you know, types in their password and it's saved on their iPhone and it's saved that way for 2 years and, you know, something happens and they don't remember it. It gets even more convoluted when you're dealing with Exchange because, like, say, with on-site Exchange for, you know, that we have for that same hotel and resort inn, that basically when you're going into the contacts and Outlook while using on-site Exchange, it differentiates the global address book for Exchange as well as the local contact groups. So they'll go in and they'll make, you know, custom contacts, custom contact groups. And, you know, it is quite a nitpicking issue with the autocomplete. I've definitely been on the receiving end of, you know, some autocomplete troubleshooting. Like, why when I type in, you know, this and I don't get that custom group I made? And I found a lot of times it's because the group that they edited and created was saved into the local contacts list within Outlook and not, and they're by default with Exchange set to search the global address book for that Exchange organization and not the local contacts within Outlook.
Well, you know what's sad in today's day and age too is I, you know, even talking to people, a lot of people using the smartphones and stuff like that, a lot of times when they save their contacts and then I hear these horror stories of, you know, how they've had a couple hundred contacts in their phone and if something happens to their phone, they've got to get a new one or they had to reset their old one and they couldn't get the contacts back. And I go, you know, on most of your Android phones, I go, that shouldn't be a big deal, or even your iPhones. And then what I find out is I tell people this all the time. I said, you can't. I said, look, when you go to save a contact, see how it says phone. You don't want that setting. You want the one that's attached to whatever your Gmail address is, because once you do that once in the Gmail side, now you can just basically log in your Gmail and all your contacts and everything are right there. If you do it on the phone locally, if something happens to that phone, you basically have to re-put on all that information because it's nowhere in the cloud.
Yep, and there's some phone companies that will actually make a profit and charge the end users for the pulling and the migrating of that contact list. Yeah,
if it works, and that, you know, from what I've seen most of the time, a lot of times that does not actually work. Or when it does work, it actually kind of corrupts the information and stuff is all jumbled up, and you still got to go back in and fix it.
Yep, and I'll tell you one of the I don't know if you've dealt with this. Anybody who has will immediately know what I'm talking about is, like, say, migrating contacts and email information file folders from Outlook Express to normal Outlook. It is quite, you know, a pain in the you-know-what to –
I'm sorry, Outlook what?
Outlook Express, the old – yeah, exactly. But there are a lot of people, and you have to remember that we are, you know, right at the after, you know, effects of facing, you know, the end of life for XP. And there is quite, you know, it's came up quite a lot. That's the only reason why I'm experienced with it. And I actually had to have my boss step in and show me how it's done, you know, dealing with the DBX files. And basically, I don't know why that there's no way to, you know, export a PSD for Outlook Express, but there's a lot of people that have Windows XP and they're facing upgrading their operating system, but they were also using Outlook Express in tandem with XP, and they, you know, you're not going to build them a Windows 7 workstation and then find Outlook Express to put back on it. And then they're going to say, you know, well, I need all my email folders and all my contact information, but it's not a straight, you know, import export with Outlook Express to Outlook, even though you'd figure, you know, there would be some type of support to build that in. The only way that I found to do it is basically copying the DBX files, which, you know, could be anywhere from 1 to 5 gigs worth of file weight,
right,
and basically, you know, copying those over into something like Windows Live Mail, and then you can import from – then you can do a direct import from Live Mail to normal Outlook.
See, I – you know, and that's sad because a lot of customers over the years, if they did have Outlook Express and were actually using it, one of the things that I did – I mean, when did Windows Live Essentials come out?
Mm-hmm.
That was – I mean, that wasn't that – I mean, it was a few years ago. I'm trying to remember. I don't know if it was 2010.
You know, now we're seeing a lot of the Outlook.com. And
right. So, you know, a lot of times I moved people off of Outlook Express and moved them onto Windows Live Mail because it was a better client.
It's a responsible decision.
You know, and it's sad that a lot of these people have had these computers for years and they're still on Outlook Express. The biggest thing I deal with in residential, though, is not Outlook Express. It's AOL.
Yeah, AOL. I've seen it, and believe it or not, in the business world, it comes up. You know, with people, even I've seen businesses that still have AOL domain accounts, and it's surprising. You know, the lasting retention that AOL had demanded and has been awarded. Like the amount of people that seem to have wanted to stay. I heard you guys on the last show saying that you got mail. Basically MP3 has not even changed. It's the same recording.
Yep. Yeah.
Because that's a trademark for them.
Exactly. And they know it. You know, and one of the things I've had to move clients off of that, off of the software version of AOL Mail, because what it started doing was it was changing the attachments.
I heard that. That also happens. It happens to me. It's been happening lately sometimes with the GFI agent where – with GFI, it produces a taskbar, a task tray icon that people can just right click and put email tech screenshot. Like it'll basically send us an email to our, all purposes support email account, which goes to every tech, and basically it will automatically open whatever default mail application and attach a screenshot image of whatever they're currently seeing or experiencing on their screen. They can just, right click email tech screenshot and it'll open up if it's Outlook and a message. All they have to do is type in something and hit send, if they want to send a message. And when those come to an iOS device, like my iPhone, all of a sudden, about a month to 2 months ago, the attachments coming in from people emailing through GFI were coming into the phone as winmail.dat.
Okay.
I have to actually RDP from my phone to my office workstation and then open Outlook through my phone to view the attachment because the attachment screenshots were coming up as that same thing.
Yeah. And, you probably heard this too, but one of the things that I had done was they had lost access to Outlook 2010 on a machine that I had to redo because whatever tech did it before had an illegitimate copy on there. Mm-hmm. And so basically in order to save them money, I just said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a tab in your browser that goes to AOL.com. And guess what? When you look at the attachments there, they're regular attachments.
Yeah.
They're the XML file or whatever you need or PDFs and all that stuff. You just grab them, drag them, drop them on your desktop and you're good. So that was an easy enough fix, but it's like, I can't remember the last time that AOL has actually updated their software.
Yep, and I'm finding I have a suspicion in the commercial email environment that there are starting to be some spam filters and some interference with AOL domain accounts because I've been approached for support tickets from some people that are using Exchange and that they are having issues communicating with AOL email addresses, like not being able to send to or receive from, and just some interference somewhere along the chain, whether it be spam filters or with the AOL email domain addresses.
Wow, yeah, it's definitely it's interesting out there and we're the ones that are called on to to fix this stuff because. You're either not going to get support from AOL or you're not going to get support from, a lot of these companies. And that's a lot of the stuff that I deal with even on a residential, level.
And I look at it like it's one of those crucial times, in the IT industry where you face a situation, where, you can kind of see, an insight to some tech's character and stuff when they face a situation like this, that it's probably more work and it's an uphill battle to realize that it's time to take the reins and try to move the end user away from an activity that they are ingrained to, but that even if it's not in the current you know, time is causing them a headache or an issue that you know down the road because of your industry insight that this is not going to be a sustainable, you know, method of achieving whatever, you know, they're trying to achieve. So a lot of times you face a lot of, you know, a lot of static about it. They don't want to move away from that. Like I've had businesses and office managers that were basically had multiple email addresses that they needed to monitor and maintain and, you know, send and receive from. And they were doing so by, say, having like three tabs open in Chrome, you know, with three different email accounts through the webmail. And I said, please, I know it's going to be, you know, some learning curve and adjustment cost, but if you will trust me, will you please, you know, let me show you Outlook and let me just kind of sit here. If even I will sit with you, you know, for an hour sometime or on the phone via remote connection for free, just to tutor you and kind of show you, because I know how much you will, you know, appreciate it afterwards and how much it will save, you know, you and increase in productivity in your day. Because these people sit at their computer, that's what we have to realize, for 8, 10, 12 hours a day.
Right.
On the computer for that much of time straight. And if you think about it, it's kind of a fantastic achievement for somebody to sit at a computer. We, even as techs, we don't usually have an extended, sustained contact with a computer or with a solitary single computer.
Right.
You know, usually we'll bounce around, whatever. There are some people that literally sit on their computer 10 hours straight. And it's kind of a miraculous thing for someone to be able to do that and experience no issues whatsoever.
Absolutely. Hey, I want to take a quick commercial break here. Today's episode is brought to you by D72. It is the ultimate PC technician's repair tool designed to automate your daily workload and dramatically increase your efficiency and ultimately your bottom line. D72 provides automation for system information gathering and custom reporting, virus and malware removal, which it does very well, Windows repair and comprehensive maintenance, basic tweaking and app installations. Need to get that new version of Java installed? You can do it right from D72. It does data backup. You can use things like FABS Auto Backup, which will work with D72 and just be able to do the backups that you need to do in a quick fashion. It keeps all your favorite tools updated, which I always have a hard time doing. So I like that I have one tool. I can hit a button and I can either set it to update automatically on a regular basis, or I can, every time I log in, I can have it update real quick and it keeps all my tools updated. It keeps my configurations and definitions synced in the cloud, which is useful. If you're in a office or something like that, you can download the little version of D72 and basically get it installed, and it will pull all the information down the way that you had it set up, so you can use it on site. It also has integration with your PSA CRM or ticket tracking software. New simple and descriptive interface for viewing and reacting to system alerts, and also for running internal functions. A lot more information in case you don't know what tool you're using. It kind of explains what that particular tool does, so you're not just kind of clicking around and pushing a bunch of buttons. You get an idea of what you're actually trying to fix. You can build custom HTML reports with your pre-configured templates. You can customize apps or system alerts, which are all automatically logged as you work within D72. It's great to have, you know, after you've cleaned that machine up, you can get a copy of all those logs. You can either email them from that system, or you can have it saved to your USB stick, which is great. And you can show the customer, especially if you configure it for what you want the customer to see, and say, here's all the things we just cleaned up. It's great for that. You can reorder all your D72 functions, mixing and matching them with custom apps in your predefined auto mode routines. So you can run the apps in the order that you want and at what works best for you and your company. And Nick is always adding new features. D72, automate, relax, get paid. Head on over to foolishit.com and use the offer code PODNUTS20. All right. So So we kind of talked about what you're doing as far as managed services. Now, I heard you mention GFI a couple times.
I shouldn't have said GFI because they just went through a rebranding and renaming. Max Focus, is it Logic Now? I don't know. I know they were keen to send us some information ahead of time so that we knew where to send the money and whose name to put on that check.
You know, the problem with branding is usually what you start off with is kind of what sticks around for quite a while. So,
and I can see why, because I've been in association with a lot of larger companies and some people that have been in the industry for a while, and I was kind of told some things in regards to GFI. Of course, these are people that are like on ConnectWise or something, and they like to kind of look down at GFI, and they had basically said that they had been around for a while, and they used to be referred to as Hound Dog, and that. I can tell that I can see why they were headed towards a restructuring, because there is among some of the, old timers and the people that have been in the industry for a long, long time, that there is some negative kind of view towards GFI. But I found, for a company my size and even up to in discussion with Marshall Emery, I know that that's what he, when he onboards with consulting for companies that my size normally, probably a little less than the size that we're at now, he recommends GFI. It's an easy tool to get used to. It builds in the antivirus with the remote support and take control features, as well as the monitoring. And now they have integrated backup solutions as well as application filtering. You can just kind of tell it's got a nice dashboard that's, access through HTML, with client trees, and you can pick a workstation, take control. You can gather reports, look at the, health indicators and the different monitoring metrics. And, it's easy to understand.
Yeah, and I think there are different tools for different, styles or types of business. And I think that's what's important for people to understand. What you might find is an industry standard, or what might work for you might not be the tool that you need at a certain stage in your, in your business growth.
It's cost effective is the biggest reason I feel like people pursue it. It's easy for the startup computer shop to go through.
Yes.
You get billed on a per device basis. You don't get – it's not like ConnectWise or something where you have to foot, the cost of like a $10,000, software purchase or something like that. You get started with a free trial. You sign up and you learn to use the agent, and then after your trial's up, it's relatively cheap. It's a few bucks per workstation, depending on if you want the managed antivirus. And, that's a huge sell in itself, that you can basically – install the agent on a client's computer for the take control aspects and the monitoring aspects, and that can come already without any configuration or effort by you, built in with antivirus, which is actually a reskinned version of Viper antivirus, which is usually what we use in our company, to begin with. So,
I've told this to people before, but Viper Rescue was my go-to tool for starting a cleanup on a computer in safe mode back when I used to do it manually.
Yep, and they have their trial is actually a full featured 30-day trial for Viper antivirus, and it is all. I also use it for residential cleanups from time to time. It's a good cleanup tool because it's a pretty high powered tool that you can use. You can basically install the free trial of Viper and use it to clean up that one time instance, kind of like you use a lot of the Hitman Pro one time activations. It's a lot of these tools will give you the full featured, full powered version for in a trial basis, which you really only need that one instance of cleanup anyways when you're dealing with that type of residential break fix type of stuff.
Yeah, and one of the things I've liked about a lot of these companies is I definitely like a company that does a tiered service. Mm-hmm. So if I'm a small IT company and they're going to give me a lower price because I'm only doing so much volume, and as I grow my business, I can pay a little bit more or move my services up. I really like that with a lot of these businesses, and it makes me think about, using them for, certain aspects of my business. So now, with the GFI service, how long have you been using that for?
Since we began the company. Okay. It's what my boss had developed and implemented in the prior business. Interestingly enough, that we're currently in the middle of acquisition negotiations. With another local IT company. So, I've been using it during my whole career.
Okay.
And even as in depth as creating, you can create custom batch scripts and, you know, silent scripts that you can issue from the GFI dashboard to run on a specific workstation. Like, you know, the one that I've created is like an uninstall batch script, which is basically silently goes through and loads the silent executable for the uninstaller for it. So if I load GFI on, you know, in another area city that's a couple hours away or something, and I can actually issue that remote script check that will uninstall the agent, you know, from my desk at my office.
Oh, okay. Now, how did you figure out how to write that batch script? Was it pretty easy?
There's some like forum, basically, like websites that are like affiliated with GFI directly might be under, you know, the GFI website, to where it's solely dedicated to focusing on scripts for GFI. So there was a big resource and database of different scripts. There's a lot of really kind of neat things that people have come up with to do different things within GFI. It's just the fact that it has that ability to issue. You know, you can do remote background through command consoles. You can, you know, usually generally what it's mostly used for is just the direct team viewer take control.
Yeah, which I've used that, and it works perfectly. I mean, works great.
You know? And the alerts, you know, I take pride in telling most people, you know, not only in a sales sense, that it's very rare for one of our clients to call me and let me know that they're down, because 90% of the time I know that a client is down before they do, because of the monitoring and alerts that happen within GFI, you know, and just comes from me, you know, actively, you know, in real time monitoring that information, like my email address and everything. But most of the time I will call a client and say, are you guys down right now? Are you guys okay? And they'll, like, you'll hear a couple of clicks and they're like, as a matter of fact, yeah, we're down right now.
Wow.
Okay. You know, and it's kind of a big selling point. There's been a couple instances where I was just happened to be in the right place at the right time and on my way somewhere, on my way to work, and I was actually able to show up, you know, on site at a client's address, you know, because I noticed that their server was offline or something, and I was able to walk in and basically say, hi, I'm here, your network is out. And they're like, what? Oh, wow, it is.
That's good, because they know, and that's one of those things we have a hard time within this, you know, within this industry, is showing what our value is. Because like the issue you gave me earlier with that customer saying, hey, you know what, we just don't want to pay this managed service anymore. We don't feel we're really getting anything for it. And the next thing, you turn around, they get CryptoWall. Mm-hmm. And then they go, okay, now we understand what we were paying for. Yep. And we're going to start paying you again.
One instance of CryptoWall, and this is kind of like, you can use, you know, numbers a lot of times to express the value. Unfortunately, a lot of times, as you know, the value is not often realized until experiencing a traumatic event like that. But one instance of CryptoWall could be billed anywhere from, you know, $500 to $1,000 to, you know, to clean up and rescue the data and mitigate the damage that was done, you know, which would have obviously, you know, in most cases be covered under any type of managed service plan.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, even though, and I still tell people this, we can't guarantee we're going to protect you from everything. But if we put these things in place, we can get you back up and running in a short period of time, you know. But that's, you know, that comes back to, a lot of times, it will protect you against most things, you know, every once in a while. So, you know, here's what I always tell people, is social engineering is to get you to click on something. Mm-hmm. If they can get you to click on it, I don't really care what you have in place for the most part. A lot of times you're giving it permission to launch, it's going to launch and do its, you know, yeah, do its dirty work.
And it's funny, because I know you'll agree, in almost every instance where there's an infection or something that you're facing, almost 100% of the time, the end user is just completely, you know, indifferent to how it happened. They cannot, well, I just do not know how that
right.
got there. You know, and I know, you know, you guys have been discussing on a prior show, just kind of like a recent trend of an increase in infections. There has just been some all out, you know, absolutely crazy things that are happening inside people's browser windows. I've been seeing, you know, some browser hijacks and infections that, you know, are so extensive and so, you know, direct and all encompassing that I have actually began completely removing, you know, certain browsers and then reinstalling them. You know, like say Chrome, some people I've seen versions, especially Firefox, get so infected. Basically, the shortcuts on their desktop are infected. You know, multiple extensions and hijacks. You know, a lot of these malwares, they can actually, you know, insert, inject, you know, HTML and stuff and scripts onto the, like, a Google result to make, you know, basically put their own search results at the top. And it's just, you know.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, there was really, when I was dealing with other browsers, Chrome or Firefox, there really wasn't a whole lot of tools that would, there's tools to clean up the infections, but there's not necessarily tools to clean up all the redirects of search engines and stuff like that. So I would go in and do it manually. Well, but there's a lot of times that I actually, same thing, I had to do an uninstall. And then not only that, I went and deleted the folder and then did a fresh install. Because if you don't
some of the worst, also most annoying browser related issues that I've seen are these proxy redirects.
Yes.
Deeply rooted registry based, you know, extensive proxy redirects where you can go into the LAN settings all you want and uncheck that, you know, use proxy. But as soon as you do anything, you know, 30 seconds later, it's somehow automatically rechecked. And wow. There's been some like really extensive, to where it took even somebody like my boss, you know, an hour, 2 hours, you know, of cleanup time that we had to bill, you know, for a client, you know, those probably at the time on an ongoing basis and not in any type of contract. Actually a raw 2 hours of time spent, you know, resolving some of these proxy issues, because it'll, you know, a piece of malware will come in and flip those switches and make it so it's one of those things where it's obvious that they're infected. But what resource are you going to go to? The average end user does not have a pen drive with all the installers for the tools like we do have. Like, so if they can't open their browser and actually go search for a tool to help them, what are they going to do? With these proxy redirect viruses, you can't access the internet.
Well, and even if they don't, if they're not at that level, what gets me is it's not just that, but they will go out on the internet and let's say their computer's going slow and they'll download PC Optimizer Registry Cleaner Pro or whatever.
I think the more the better. They will, you know, they'll have three different antiviruses installed and all this. I try to, that is the absolute, you know, 100% thing that I stress to the end users. I spend a lot of time training end users. I even do some tutoring and stuff like that. And, you know, I like to kind of sit down and feel out how I can, you know, kind of help, you know, the end user better utilize technology to kind of make their life easier. And I will always tell them, simple is best. Simple is best. I'll tell them when I return their computer to them, what is on here now is what needs to be on here.
Yep, exactly.
There doesn't need to be anything else. And I'll tell them basically, if you ever see anything that says it's going to do anything positive for your computer, know that it's going to screw it up.
Right.
There's nothing that you can install that's going to make it run better. It's going to make it run faster. If it says it's going to optimize or clean up your drivers or clean up your registry, it's going to hurt your computer.
Yes.
You know, simple is best. You have a browser on here. You have an email management utility. You have one antivirus. And, you know, based on your needs, maybe QuickBooks or whatever it is. But I'll tell them, like, if there's anything else that you feel that you need to have in your computing environment, I would like you to tell me about it now. So, and I'll even tell them, feel free anytime there's some need that you feel that you have in the computer, go ahead and call me and consult me. Ask me, this is what I'm trying to, like Matt says, there's often a big disconnect between, you know, the symptoms they describe and what they're actually, you know, the problem is. There's also a big disconnect in a lot of times what they feel that their objective that they're trying to accomplish is, and then the methods that they go about it to achieve it. So I'll tell them, just go ahead and call and tell me what you're trying to accomplish, and let me either connect remotely and install my recommendation of a utility that would help you accomplish that goal, or I can go ahead and give you my recommendation for a program. Because like you said, they'll go out and search Google and not really knowing how to go about what they want to accomplish, enter some type of search string, you know, that's going to only produce, you know, results that are going to be disadvantageous to their, you know, to their computing. So,
well, what, you know, some of the worst things out there is when they're doing searches, let's say they feel they have a problem with Microsoft Office. Microsoft Office is not running correctly. They'll go out and do a Google search, and the first three, you know, top things, some might even be ads. Right. Will be illegitimate companies that will basically remote in their machines, screw it up, and charge them $300-some-odd.
It's like you said, we have to start training them. Please use the address bar.
Yeah.
Don't use the search bar. And then you got to understand, you know, like the first, like you said, the first three, you know, spots up there, like whoever pays the most money, you know, to put it up there.
Exactly.
You know, it has nothing to do with that. So that's why I tell them, stay away from Google. I usually tell them, you know, do whatever you'd like to do on the web. Go to whatever websites you want to do, you know, surf the web, do whatever you like. But where you need to specifically take extreme caution is where you download anything and install anything.
Right.
You know, exactly. You can go to – but, you know, there are some instances, as you see, you know, I can't pin it down definitively where people have not installed anything and that they do, you know, end up with an infection, you know, based through some type of, you know, advanced scripting on some websites that can actually – you know, you leave certain download websites open for too long as a tab in there. I won't say the name of the – popular one, but you'll find things can kind of just creep their way in there without even running anything. Things have gotten really advanced these days, and I can see a focus, you know, from the malware and the illegitimate community of programming and scripting a lot of evil, ingenious ways to do things from within, you know, a web browser, because most days now 90% of what people do on the computer is in a browser. And go ahead. I will tell you one of the main annoyances. We can compare the main annoyances between end users when it comes to that as far as the bulk of computing done in the browser.
Oh yeah, and you know, and I think, you know, I definitely believe in drive-bys. You're on a web browser. You have a legitimate company that was compromised on their, you know, in the HTML code or whatever. That's, you know, scripted to basically run something on your computer. The thing is, I think if you have a, you know, you don't even have to have the best antivirus. If you have a decent name brand antivirus, I think a lot of times those things will automatically be blocked, because it's really hard for these companies to make sure that they write code to kind of get past each and every one of these things, especially when they're updated every day. So what ends up happening most of the time, here's what I see, is I have a person that buys a computer and has Norton antivirus on it with a 60-day trial, and the 60-day trial ends and they don't ever pay for it, and they're on a Windows 8 machine and their Windows Defender is turned off because they have Norton installed. And so they have no working antivirus at all on that machine at that point, other than an older version with definitions and everything, you know, from Norton.
I did hear you guys' Windows 8 show. I was kind of tempted to make a quip there about also having that Windows 8 virus, but I'll not enter that. But that's why I kind of like it's another thing that I like from Viper, that they've kind of put some kind of objective, intuitive thought into the nature of computers and computer infections. And I don't know if you're familiar with it. They have a feature with Viper called Active Protection. And it's just basically kind of trades off memory bandwidth with just kind of actively in real time scans the computing environment. You could even single mouse click on like an infected Java installer and it will block you from opening it. And it'll just kind of pop up and say, we've stopped you from running, you know, a malicious program. And I find that for people that, you know, like you say, there's some that no matter what you do, you know, within 6 months or less will bring their computer back to you and say that they got reinfected.
Yep.
And you're saying, like, I've put some end users on some bulletproof setups to where I thought it would be practically impossible for them to get infected. And like literally 2 months later, and they're saying, my computer is now once again grinded to a halt, you know? And I say, my God, what are you doing? You know?
Well, and that's the thing. Here's the thing. If they're clicking on a link in an email, or they're, you know, or they're downloading the latest Flash installer and it's infected, again, if they're giving it permission, and let's face it, even with, you know, the UAC, it's going to pop up and say, are you sure you want to do this?
Right.
And they click yes. Are you really, really, really sure you want to do this?
Fortunately, Viper's aggressive. It will not give them an option. It's not like UAC doesn't pop up like, well, do you want to run this? No. It you click on it, and if it has that heuristics and the virus definitions that you know, tell it definitively that that's a malicious program. Even it has web integration if you want it to where, you know, it'll block certain websites and certain plugins from running. It will not let you run, you know, an infected Java installer, it'll just pop up and say it blocked you from running it, you know, flat out. But that does, like I said, trade off, you know, memory bandwidth as a resource, and it can bog down machines. You know, you kind of, if you're looking at, you know, modern, you know, DDR3, you know, 4 gigs or better, you probably, you know, can safely run that without seeing too much performance drain. But there's some older systems, you know, like 2 gigs or less or something, like they can't run active protection from Viper.
Right.
But interesting enough, you know, we're here, you know, like you guys had mentioned in the show prior, to where we're starting to see a lot of, you know, infected advertising on legitimate sites that are actually, you know, spreading CryptoWall now, you know, bundled in with the ZBot that, you know, I hate to say it, like we say, we don't like Corey was saying, you don't want to, you know, profit on someone else's misery. You know, I take caution to, you know, express any type of, you know, positive sentiment in that. But, you know, it definitely keeps us busy. And I've seen no better tool to convert, you know, that, you know, customer or client that just is unsure whether they want to be in any type of monthly maintenance agreement, you know, no better tool to bring them over to a monthly contract other than CryptoLocker.
Yeah, that's on. Yeah, it's unfortunate, but you know, and I definitely, you know, I put the free version of CryptoPrevent on all the machines that come through here, because even if they don't have a lot of information, it's just in case. Even if they're not updating or whatever, maybe it will kind of sort of protect them to a certain point. I feel better doing it that way. But I always tell them, I said, the best solution is to have a managed service that is constantly monitoring your system to make sure that nothing's going wrong. And and as soon as it does, we can find out about it and fix the problem immediately.
And the scary part about it is what, you know, you guys had, one of your guests had mentioned the other day, is that with CryptoWall, a lot of times now we're seeing where people are paying the ransom and not receiving their encryption key. And that is a scary concept, because, you know, I've recently, during this last week, since that incident, I've started kind of doing some, you know, off time and after hours research on, you know, to get myself completely up to speed with the CryptoLocker issue as far as the protection and mitigation, you know, that's available. And actually, I before rolling out any type of extensive, you know, CryptoLocker defense, you know, mechanisms or plans with our clients, I wanted to understand fully what happens in the background. Like, say, when you install, you know, Nickshaw's CryptoPrevent or something like that, I just wanted to know what kind of switches and triggers it flips in the background, because I need to know, you know, what the, you know, there might be some, you know, resulting, you know, issue that pops up on the other end, you know, because of the, you know, controls. I've seen that Nickshaw's CryptoPrevent actually, you know, I haven't had any issues come up later from it, because one of the biggest, you know, differences in perception that you have in practice that you have to weed out from residential to business is the fact that, say, from a billing standpoint, with residential computer, you can show up, you know, at someone's house, you can get that device fixed to where it behaves as it should while you're there. You can collect your payment. You can leave. An hour later, that machine can break, and it has nothing to do with your responsibility. So there are a lot of techs and people that have focused on residential that develop that behavior to fix things temporarily. They will fix the issue to where it gets them out of the house, it gets the payment in their pocket, but it may not necessarily be the industry best practices way to deal with that. So, and with managed services, you go there on site to a client's, you know, property, and you fix something and it works while you're there, and you say, okay, good, I did my job, and you leave. If it breaks an hour or a week later, it's still your problem.
Yes.
So you'll learn quickly to fix things and use best practices way to fix issues, resolve issues, install programs, set up environments that are done the way that they should be done, because you're reducing your, you know, overall workload in the future. If you fix something the right way to where it doesn't break anymore in the future, that it's advantageous for you. A lot of times with the residential mindset, you can fix something temporarily, it still gets you paid. And then maybe later, if it breaks again, you're getting paid again. You know, it's kind of, I have to kind of weed techs away from that and teach them the more best practices route.
See, I turn down business, or I turn down business like that all the time, because residential customers will call and say, hey, you know, I need a virus removed. My computer's infected. I'm like, great. You want me to come pick it up? You want to drop it off? And they're like, well, can't you just bring your USB stick and you know, just do it in an hour? And I just look at him and go, I have no idea exactly what's wrong with that. And I said, no, that's not the type of technician I am, because I'm going to go through and make sure and check all your hardware to make sure everything is running and everything is working the way it should. And it's going to take me a little bit longer than that. So we've got one of two choices. I can either come out there, and if you want me to sit on site, it's going to be $99 an hour. If you want me to come pick up the computer and drop it back off, that's going to be $40 for that, and I'll do the virus removal for $89. So it'll be $129. Or you can drop it off and it'll be $89 flat. We can do this any way you want. But I said, I'm not going to come and sit on site and guarantee you that, you know, yes, can I fix your Internet Explorer problem so you can get back online? Absolutely. Can I do it in 15 minutes? Absolutely. Can I be assured that the rest of the computer is clean and working properly? Absolutely not.
You know, that's one of those ethical situations where, you know, an unethical person might be looking at you like, you know, it's not in your best interest to, you know, train the end user. It's not in your best interest to fix these things so they'll be fixed forever. But, you know, that's one of those, you know, crucial forks in the road where you have to kind of show some personal character and some goodwill towards, you know, your common man to actually want to help them, whether or not it may not be directly helpful for your financial incentives, you know, to fix something to where it doesn't break forever. You know, it's different in the business and managed services wing. You know, obviously you want your clients to be problem free for a while, but you know, it's sometimes that, you know, it's better to make that decision to kind of, you know, better their computing life to fix something and make sure that it's not an issue in the future.
Well, absolutely. And that's, it really comes down to my goal is, you know, it's no different than a doctor's goal. My goal really, or what most doctors start off as, my goal is to make sure that I give you a, you know, I take care of your stuff so that you have a great computing experience on a day-to-day basis, you know, and if I don't do that, then I'm not really doing my job. Now, I'm still going to get paid accordingly. I'm going to do it for what I think it's worth, because you're taking my knowledge and my time and my effort to do this. So it's not going to be cheap. It's not going to be free. But at the same time, I'm going to take care of your computing needs. If that's the type of thing that you want, that's great. These other people that just want to come in with their USB stick, you know, their magic USB stick and get something done in an hour, that's not me. I just can't
right.
do it. You know?
Yeah, it's definitely, you have to have a kind of like a thorough checklist. What I see it a lot of times basically is I know in my head, you know, the image of what I feel like the appropriate and, you know, gold standard installation standpoint is, where I feel that that is right there. That's the suite, basically, like where in Windows 8 you can set that as your restore image. That is the point where you feel, you know, where machines and clients' workstations and the computing environment should be, you know. And if it takes you a little bit extra time to kind of get it to that point, even if it's someone's wanting you to remove a virus, you know, you might want to still go ahead and, you know, check out the services that are running and tune things up, just make sure that they have a good overall experience. But
yeah, because if something happens in a short period of time, they're going to come back and go, hey, I'm having other problems.
Yeah, and there, you know, that it also produces a lot of you know, uncomfortable situations where, you know, things break over and over again. And you keep having to take them. You're like, I can't really ask to bill again, because they're saying basically, because, you know, that came up, there's no way you could have really done your job for the original issue. But, you know, in my career so far, it's very minimal. I don't deal with a lot of these issues. I do some residential on the side for friends and some, you know, extra side work. But for the most part, like say virus removal and tune-ups and stuff like that is probably, you know, less than 10% combined of what I do, you know, in the grand scheme of things. We, you know, mostly paying most attention to, like, you know, network administration and email support and just all purpose general, you know, we like to be like the friendly, you know, neighborhood IT firm. You know, sure. We stop in, see our clients, you know, at least a couple times a month, whether they call or not. You know, we're in good relations and good standing, talking basis with our clients. You know, they see, some of them even have their own day, like, okay, this is, you know, that client's day. They know that we'll be there, you know, like every Thursday, somebody from our team will be there, you know. So it's a little different in the business world, you know, as far as, you know, I don't spend too much time and energy thinking, you know, about virus removals and stuff like that. It does happen. And that's another thing, you know, GFI, you can actually kind of get a granular report, you know, you can see whose workstation, you know, where the file location is, you know, for infections when it actually trips the Viper on there.
No, that's great. Yeah. You know, it's just, yeah, I like this business as far as being able to help people, you know, again, have a good computing experience. And that's why I do what I do. I also enjoy working on things and fixing problems. That's another reason I do what I do. You know, but I also like getting paid for my time and effort. And I think there's plenty of customers out there that are willing to pay good money to have a good computing experience on a regular basis, you know? So, I just believe that that's one of the things that we offer to people, and it's a good thing, you know? So, is there any other, I know we're a little bit over an hour here. Is there any okay. other things that you, any other things that you wanted to share today?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's been some, you know, funny instances of some things, you know, recently. You know, it was kind of a new nuanced thing to kind of experience walking into a business and just kind of being able to walk behind the counter and walk freely, access areas freely, you know, without kind of, you know, it's not often that you go to the movie theater and you can just walk behind the counter and go and jump on their computer. You know, it happens a lot when you get used to these businesses. A lot of times, you know, if I'm at a business on an on-site and I need get a, you know, immediate urgent request, I'll oftentimes just jump on a workstation, RDP to my office and, you know, take care of the issue and just use their office like it's mine. But there's definitely offers some unique and you know, funny instances where you kind of are on site at businesses and you witness some unique events. Like there's a one client of ours that seems like over the last couple months the only time that they call us on site or that I end up being there, I kind of end up feeling like the Grim Reaper for the employment for that company, is because they are about to terminate somebody, and they make sure to notify us ahead of time because they want us on site. Out of the specific client, I guess, has a fear or maybe have a history of malicious actions by terminated employees. So they'll make sure that we are on site at the time of issuing the, I guess, firing the people, you can say. So I've experienced quite some, you know, situations and comedy to me, drama to the office where people get fired. And it's almost like now when people see me at the office, if I walk in for any other reason, they're wondering like who's getting the axe today.
Oh.
You know, the IT guys are here to make sure they can't log into their domain computer.
Oh, you definitely, that's rough.
And it's just happened to be for a couple of months that they were dealing with some high turnover. And basically almost every time I was on site, it was because somebody was getting fired that morning.
Oh.
And they wanted to make sure either I had to change the passwords if they knew the administrator password, or, you know, make sure that basically when they told me, they would just kind of like send me a signal or a text message that it was time to pull their computer access.
Okay.
To where even if they tried to log on to their workstation to go and screw with the share drive or the server or something, that they couldn't.
Oh, wow. Well, that definitely puts you in a unique position. Yeah, it's unfortunate that you sometimes have to see that stuff, but it is the way it is. And that's, again, we're there to protect our customers from any damage to their systems. And, you know, especially if it's malicious for any reason.
Mm-hmm. But it's been a fun experience learning everything this year and kind of going from that, you know, shy, you know, uninformed person, you know, to going to somebody that, like, you know, can, you know, assertively and appropriately freely kind of drive around and see our clients as needed and can is comfortable enough to where I can, you know, it's interesting just to be able to kind of walk into a business and just kind of use their site and their equipment and their resources as you know, freely wish. You get comfortable with these people. They don't care, you know, if you use the coffee machine, or you can just kind of go in there and blend in. And, you know, a lot of times people will walk up to you like you're an employee and you kind of be like, oh, no, I'm the IT guy. You know, I can't really help you find your hotel.
You know. Oh, that's great. Well, I'll tell you what, I really appreciate you coming on the show, and it sounds like you're going to have plenty of stories to share in the future, and you're more than welcome to come back at any time and go ahead and, you know, and share those things.
Sure, I would love that.
If people wanted to reach you, what would be the best way to do that?
Just like our website is SWFLMITS, MITS, you can just email me at paul at that same domain. So it would be paul at SWFLMITS.com.
Okay.
Other than that, it's pretty much the main way, or through the website. I don't know if it has some contact methods. It might have that same email address.
Okay. Very cool.
Well, just again, before we leave it, you know, I'd like to give a shout out to my boss, Brian, and, you know, why World of Warcraft should never be considered strategic business planning.
That's great. You know,
and I appreciate the opportunity to come here and finally experience. I'd like to thank the Podnuts Network for providing what they provide, and I've kind of been able to use them as a resource to further my career and, you know, experience all the shows as they happen, as I also develop personally, you know, as a computer tech, and kind of started out, you know, basically started listening to Podnuts as soon as I started my career. And I can genuinely say it's kind of like a warm, happy day and positive feeling when I see my iTunes subscription updating and there's a new episode, because I drive a lot, you know, so I have a lot of spare time to listen in the car.
Oh, that's great. Well, I appreciate that, and I'm glad that these shows are actually helpful. And now, I believe we talked earlier, you said you went back and listened to all the shows?
I've listened to, yeah, every single Podnuts episode, between Podnuts Pro, Podnuts Daily, and even to where my office, you know, mates kind of cringe when I put it on. I don't know why, you know, they don't like. Maybe it's because it's just my desk speakers and it's just kind of sounds droning to them. But, you know, I listen to it all the time because I feel like, you know, you listen to music at night when you want to unwind. When I get up in the morning, I want to listen to something like this that gets my mind in the mood to deal with these issues. You know, so you want to get amped up, you know, get psyched up, like to actually get out there and deal with things. And it kind of gets your memory and your mind and your brain bandwidth going to, you know, where it needs to be to approach that day, you know, because you're going to be doing this type of stuff anyways. You need to get your brain on the frequency of thinking about these things and create those type of thought patterns. You don't want to be, you know, listening to Pantera at 9 a.m. on the way to the office, you know, and you're going to go and rage on your on the keyboards of some clients. I like, you know, it just gets you in the mood to work.
Oh, that's great. I appreciate that. I'm, like I said, I'm glad it's helping some people out there, because that's basically why we do the show. So I'm glad you're getting something out of it. And I'll let you guys know, if you want to find me, you can find me over on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Halish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on this show, like Paul was, just email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, which we will play on the show, it's 1-888-697-0162. Go ahead and leave a voicemail over there, and you know, as soon as we get it, we'll definitely play it on the show, and you know, so you guys can hear your own voice on the show. And I want to thank our sponsors, Instant House Call and D72 today, for supporting this episode of Podnuts Daily. And don't forget, if you need business paperwork to get started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. It's the link on the left-hand side. That's the paperwork I started using in my business back in 2010, and it's the paperwork that I still use in some form today. And if you guys could, please leave us a rating and review over on iTunes. That would help the show out a lot, kind of let other people know about the show a little bit more, so they can, you know, learn these things that we're all learning too. And you guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. It's getting to be that Christmas season, and I know if you're like me, I do a lot of shopping on Amazon because it's quick and easy. And if you just remember, that doesn't change your price at all. If you just go to podnuts.com/Amazon, that puts a little change in our pockets to help us bring you these great shows. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily.
Hi folks, Lisa here from Call That Girl's Remote Support Show. Did you know that I have a brand spanking new show coming out called Call That Girl's Office 365 Show? You can check it out right here on the Podnuts Network by going to podnuts.com/CTG. Listen to all of my day-to-day problems and solutions I have with Outlook, third-party apps, and Office 365.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.